Hiroshima.
Hey guys out there in Jellyland, it's time for another exciting episode of No U-Turns at the Drive-In with your host, Lucas Wilson, and...
I'm sorry, Lucas. Did you say Jellyland?
Yeah, I did say Jellyland, man.
Is that like an alternative version of Candyland created by Bill Cosby?
It's Jelloland!
You're on to me, Dave. You got on to me. I don't know what to say now.
Yes, I am David Halston, the second host of the show. All right, second host or co-host?
Co-host?
Co-host. Yeah.
Yeah. We do this together, man. We're thick and thin.
If anything, you're the second host because of all the times I talk over you. You're trying to make a point, and I'm like, no, I have a point to make.
You son of a bitch!
Listen to me!
All right, so Dave.
Yes.
What did we watch today?
Today we watched The Manster.
The Manster?
Half man, half monster, all terror. The Manster.
So is this a man?
The Manster.
And a monster?
Well... He's...
Well, tell us all about it. Come on, man.
Yeah, well, the plot is kind of convoluted.
Well, no, it's pretty straightforward, man. Man becomes monster or manster, and he kills things.
Well, at first, I love how at first you have no clue what's going on. The film starts, and there are these women bathing in, like, this oasis pond sort of thing, like a natural steam pond.
This takes place all in Japan, by the way.
Yes, it takes place all in Japan, and there are two American actors in it.
Yeah, it's like half American, half Japanese movie.
But I was never sure if the guy playing his wife was actually an American woman or a Japanese woman. They really, really dressed up to look like an American woman.
IMDb can help us with that. What is the main character? Was it Peter?
It
or
was
Larry. Larry.
Larry.
His wife is Linda.
The actor's name.
Jane Hilton, who...
Sounds American to me.
Yeah. No, the person that looked more like it was like half American, like they were Asian American was maybe the assistant.
Right. Tara?
Tara. Is that it?
Is her name Tara? Which is kind of funny because the actress's name is Terry.
Tetsu, Doctor, is that it? If that's the case, she's only been in this movie.
I guess so, man. And George Wyman as Monster. It not Manster. It says on the cast list that he is a monster, not a manster.
Are you sure?
Yes. Look at the cast.
Well, I just see Larry Stanford.
No, at the bottom.
Oh, George Wyman. Oh, does he play the breakaway monster?
Well, because breakaway.
Well, obviously, he breaks away, so that's the monster, and the man breaks off. Together, they were a manster.
But when they physically separated, they became man and monster.
Yeah.
We should probably explain the plot a little better.
Okay. So, there is a scientist doing genetic experiments. We open up with the movie with, like, his initial genetic experiments. I think it was his brother... He ended up, throwing him in... He ended up shooting him because he turned...
All you know at the beginning, before the credits roll, is that there's Japanese women in this natural, steamy pond, you know, and because it's not like they're in a sauna or a hot tub. It's like natural hot water up in the mountains. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
What would you call that, dude? But you know what I'm saying.
A spring?
A spring? Yeah.
Hot spring?
They're hot spring. Thank you. So this is women bathing in a hot spring, and then a monster attacks them. And you see a splatter of blood against that, Japanese-style paper door.
Uh-huh.
And then it says Manster in the title sequence rolls.
Right.
After which you just see a guy in a suit walking up this mountain trail to a cabin at the top of a mountain. He goes in. says hi to his woman who's clearly his secretary, then goes down some stairs, kills a monster, and dumps it into a furnace.
And I think he said he was his brother. Did he say that?
Yeah, he said that guy used to be his brother, and he's doing these genetic experiments. And he started with
his
family members.
Yeah, he started his wife, who is like in a cage the whole time. She looks
she looks like Quasimodo.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And she just spends her time mentally handicapped.
Yeah, it's like he says she doesn't even recognize him anymore.
Uh huh.
But it was great. It's like that whole sequence happens. And then we see another guy walking up the hill to get to this cabin. And we're like, "What is this film just a loop of people walking up this mountain trail to this cabin where they go in and kill a monster?" I pictured like a very creature effects version of Hostel. Like they've paid to come in and destroy it, kill a monster.
Yeah.
Which I think would be a great movie, by the way.
We'll follow it away for later.
Yep, put that one in a file, a special file.
So what happens with this reporter, Dave?
Well, I didn't tell you he was a reporter, but thank you, Lucas. He's a reporter, we find out very quickly. He's talking to the secretary, kind of hitting on her. And then the scientist is there, and the scientist is like explaining something, which from what we've seen, we know he's clearly not telling the truth. He's saying he's working on some fungus or something. But we've seen what his experiments are, and he's feeding just this line of bullcrap to this reporter.
Yeah.
Who then knocks out. And
he gives him, like, knockout
juice.
Gets
out his syringe.
Yeah, sticks him in the neck with a syringe. And then from there on, he becomes a really angry, confused, horny man.
Yes, you said that very well.
And there becomes a thing where he's all of a sudden having a relationship with this secretary who claims that she has no more feelings for anything or anybody, but then she does kind of fall for him, but then his wife shows up because she thinks, you know, he's cheating on her. And
which he is.
Yeah, he is. And then she's desperate for him, like, even though he admits, like, yeah, I don't want to be around you anymore, she's like, she still likes trying to get him to, you know, see reason or something. And that goes on until he becomes more monster than man and just starts
now,
killing things.
So yeah, it's his wife that's trying to like bring him around and see reason, and it's this woman who's just starts out as like a temptress to lead him down this trail of self-destruction.
But then I don't understand
that
part.
Yeah, there are some like
what is up with that? Why does she need to tempt him to become, like, if this was a genetic thing, couldn't he just slowly transform into a monster going about his day-to-day business? Why did the doctor plan to have his assistant tempt him?
Well, you remember, Lucas, he was going to go back to America, and by the woman seducing him, that kept him in Japan where they could monitor their experiment.
Oh, I don't remember him saying that.
No, remember? The whole point was like, right after he's been injected and he goes back to the office, the guy, his boss, Ian, or I don't know if it's boss or just a coworker.
Uh-huh.
Anyways, Ian tells him, "Oh, your wife called and you're going back to America soon." And he's like, "Yeah, I don't know. This doctor invited me out to a party."
Okay.
I'll call my wife back in the morning.
That clears up a lot for me.
Yes.
Because other than that, it was, like, completely pointless.
No, it had a point.
No, if it wasn't for that, it would have been pointless. Like, I thought he lived there in Tokyo this whole time. I didn't know he was just there for a temporary hullabaloo, because there's, for some reason, this major American paper in Tokyo, staffed completely by Americans.
Well, at least one. Because I think there were only, I don't know. It's hard to say how many of the actors were Japanese and how many were
A lot of
American
them seemed
actors.
To be, like, mixed.
But we noticed that they were all speaking English.
Yes.
Like, it wasn't dubbed over from Japanese.
Yes.
Even though it was made in Japan, everyone was speaking English.
The, I want to see the whole full cast and crew here. Yeah, like, this was definitely, it was like a half American, half Japanese movie, because half the cast and crew is American and the other half of the cast and crew is Japanese. So I get the feeling this is probably like some kind of collaboration, perhaps, between like studios from different countries. But
yeah, it's It said it was a United Artists picture.
Yeah. So maybe that was some kind of international.
And United, I know, I think United Artists, I'm not sure if it's around anymore, but I believe it was a American company.
Yeah.
So to continue on with the plot, there's this whole issue of like, and it's like they're trying sort of to suggest something with the whole sexual tension between, you know, there's this wife and this mistress and the guy turning into a monster.
Yeah.
But then it just dissolves into like a Universal monster movie.
Yeah, they just kind of abandoned whatever they're doing. It was like, oh, now he's the monster, so he's just going to run around and kill people. Like, he ended up sprouting a second head and had one hairy hand. Yeah.
Like, at first, you just see, like, an eye poking out of his shoulder. It reminded me a lot of the scene from Army of Darkness, where Ash in that movie splits into evil Ash. It was a lot like that. So if you've seen Army of Darkness,
what if
basically that's what happens, only at a slower pace.
What if they saw this movie before?
Knowing Sam Raimi, that is definitely a possible. And I'm not saying I know him personally, but just knowing his work and seeing interviews with him, it's definitely a possibility. And I've got to say, I'm seriously looking forward to his Wizard of Oz movie.
Oh, he's doing Wizard of Oz?
Yeah, he's doing the Wizard of Oz with James Franco.
Oh, I had no idea.
It's the story of how the wizard got Oz.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Totally, man. It looks great. Watch the trailer.
I will. So, what did you find, like, particularly interesting about this movie, and, like, what would you have, like, expanded on, perhaps, Dave? Like, what would you have wished this had done to really make this a great film?
Well, the special effects weren't bad. It's like the story was, like, the dialogue was pretty well written. But it's like the special effects were kind of cheesy, but then again, that added an element to it, you know?
Uh-huh.
That was sort of like an aesthetic thing.
I mean,
worked in this film.
I mean, you didn't have to suspend your disbelief for them. It was
it's like you can follow what's happening, and you're like, okay, I'm with it. Within the confines of within the parameters this film set for how absurd it's going to get, I totally buy this.
Yeah, the effects are within the realm, unlike, say, like Rocky Jones, where like a rocket pulls a Yui. But
right.
Yeah.
And it had sort of an Island of Dr. Moreau quality. I know I've referenced that before, but and you know what? We should just watch the Island of Dr. Moreau movie from the 70s and review that.
Uh-huh.
It would be totally worth it for us to do that. But, like, you have the Island of Dr. Moreau kind of thing going on, but it's in this Japanese setting, which makes all the difference.
Yeah.
Because the Japanese can tell some really weird horror stories.
They love their monsters.
Yeah. And it's hard to judge. I'm not saying judge critically, but from the standpoint of being an American and being part of an Anglo-Saxon heritage culture, you know?
Yeah.
That the foreignness of the Japanese horror story makes it extremely strange to me, you know what I mean? From my point of view.
Yes.
And I'd actually love to listen to a Japanese person's perspective on it, because all I'm saying is my perspective is as an outsider, so anything Japanese is foreign and different to me.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm here saying this is really weird, but say more Anglo-Saxon heritage monsters like vampires and werewolves, I wouldn't consider a vampire or werewolf movie strange, you know what I mean?
Right. There was like an element of werewolf to this film.
Right.
But then there definitely was some kind of alternate influence with, like, you know, the eyeball and head sprouting out to.
Right. And I'm saying that may seem more familiar to a Japanese audience than it does to an American.
Yeah. And then maybe the furry monster man is more foreign to them. I don't know.
Right.
Yeah.
And although I will say that when it becomes a monster movie, it really felt like a Universal monster movie. I grew up watching, you know, The Wolfman, Frankenstein,
yeah,
Creature from the Black Lagoon, Dracula. This had the same qualities as those movies. So it's like, I would say that they were definitely influenced by the Universal horror movies when they made this.
Right.
So it's not just that it sort of feels like a Wolfman movie. It looks like the Lon Chaney Jr. Wolfman movie, just set in Japan.
Uh-huh.
There are a lot of similarities there. And maybe because I grew up watching the Universal horror movies on a regular basis, well, around Halloween mostly, you know,
uh-huh.
that I got really into it. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's an element of like, oh, this is like something I would watch as a kid, only it's stranger. It's kind of perverted too. And that appeals to me more at the age I am now. Whereas like the Universal movies, they have that style, but the there's some quaintness about the storytelling that these movies were made back in the 30s and 40s.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this, like, there was still a slight amount of quaintness, but it was also had this, like I said, perverted quality to it.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a rawness that suggested a much more modern horror storytelling. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like I said, the writing wasn't bad. The acting wasn't bad. In the end, that girl, she felt remorseful about what her and the doctor had done to this guy. And he started going around and like killing women, and the police were chasing him, and he just knocked the police over.
Yeah.
But that scene, his first kill, it happens is he goes into a temple and there are all these statues with all these faces, and it was really freaky.
Yeah.
Like there's the bald guy and he's got the goatee and he's sitting there praying and he doesn't speak English, but the American guy comes in there and he starts to basically do a Christian confessional type of thing, only he's talking to somebody who can't understand what he's saying. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And there was a mixed element of reverence there. Like you had the guy coming from a Christian point of view, but he's in an Asian temple, you know?
Yeah.
And then all those statues around, I don't know if this was like, if you went into Japan and went into like an ancient styled temple from their culture, that, but they had all these like Buddhist statues and just surrounded like a whole theater like of these statues.
Yeah.
And the eyes of them were like, looked like glass, and like he was just like staring into the statue, and it was like high drama there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It was borderline melodrama, but didn't quite make it to melodrama. It just felt slightly drug induced, you know?
Uh-huh.
And then he screams and blacks out, and the next thing you know, he wakes up in his apartment. He's wearing the priest's bracelet and finds the newspaper.
Yeah, he's wearing the prayer beads.
And the
headline is that a monk or something like that's been murdered by a fiend.
Well, they said a priest.
Priest? Did they say priest?
Yeah, they said priest.
Was murdered.
Although it's an English text, so. But yeah, they said slain by fiend.
So that's his first kill.
And he starts to become really surly, you know, like, and drinking a lot. Like, he just starts drinking and smoking more and more.
Uh-huh.
And he just looks wrecked, but not in the way of, like, I'm turning into a monster like Lon Chaney, you know, tortured, going, what's going to happen in the next full moon? Am I going insane? This was more like a guy's life falling apart around him for reals. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And that the monster, him turning into this monster, was more metaphorical. There was that psychiatrist that they brought in at one point.
Oh,
who just looked
yes.
like Freud, a Freud impersonator.
Yeah, and he just loses it when he's like telling him to get out.
He's like, there's nothing wrong with me. Leave me alone. You know?
Yeah. He was just... That was like some really intense acting. He was like just screaming his head off, like, get out of here.
And it wasn't like the old style of dramatic acting that you would see in like a Universal.
No, it felt a little more contemporary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
you know, the same thing with, you know, when he in the very beginning, when the scientist tossed his monster brother into the fire and like his disfigured mm-hmm. wife screamed. Too
freaked you out.
Yeah, well, no, it's just like it. It felt a little more real than some movies of the same era. But,
right.
Yeah.
And there were elements of this which were like subjects that you wouldn't normally find in a horror movie of this era. Like the female assistant, when she decides, like, I'm not working for you anymore, doctor. You've gone too far. And here, you may need this. And she gives him a package, and he unwraps it, and it's a harikiri knife, a seppuku knife, you know, to kill himself with, which uh-huh. he almost does.
Right.
Before the manster
until,
comes in.
Yeah, until the manster
and
comes,
and that scene
yeah.
where it's like the head grows out of his shoulder, where it's like, his head's just twisted to the side, screaming, and this head, even though it's a looks like a wax head, right? It's just pushing up
right.
from like under his collar, and you just see his head, and it's very...
Yeah, oh yeah.
Like, it's more backlit than it is frontlit, so you just see him kind of shadowed, and just like his head shaking, and he's screaming. That was really... Uh-huh. That was more disturbing than anything in those old Universal horror films. Far more disturbing.
It was also an interesting moment where the doctor, like, you know, he's given that knife, but then he just all of a sudden he's like,
oh yeah,
feels he needs to. He grabs the gun and then walks over, you know, to his wife and kind of gives his final goodbyes to her. Is like, I forgot what
it
he
was,
said.
Again,
but
it was
like
what I refer to as a confession scene, much like what happened
yeah.
to the American with the priest, and he kills the priest at the end of that too. And it's like,
yeah,
he basically has the same thing where he's talking to someone. She's mutated. She used to be his wife, but she's mutated. And it's he said that she doesn't really understand like what he's saying, but he just starts talking, laying out this
yeah.
confession of what their lives were like before. And it's like, hit just a much deeper level than even horror films today would even go. Unless you were like going
oh, yeah.
for like a Guillermo del Toro kind of thing, right?
Uh-huh. I mean, with the right treatment, this movie could have probably been pretty up there with some...
Yeah, it's like, that's the thing. It's like, it would lose some of its kitschy elements that sort of are, I find, endearing. And its stylistic time period. But if you made a modern version of this, not only would you have like a great monster story, but it would be really disturbing on like personal levels, you know?
Yeah.
Like intimate levels of just creepitude. So, Lucas, what, in, you know, we've been smothering this movie in kisses, but what are you going to rate it?
Oh boy. Okay. So, don't get me wrong. The movie, considering that you and I did end up doing a lot of fair amount of talking back and forth, even about like kind of non-associated things,
mm-hmm.
Did mean that the movie was a tad on the boring side.
Well, there were prolonged segments.
There were prolonged segments of monotony between
a lot of people walking around.
Yeah, a lot of walking and a lot of just kind of
sitting
discussion.
In a bar.
Like the discussion probably could have, like, they were kind of important discussions, but they could have been spiced up a bit. And
right, better camera work could have
yeah,
really
oh, yeah.
helped
it,
this
film. I think what really, one thing that could have really helped with this movie is better camera work. It was a really formulaic way that it was shot.
Yes, despite some of the monster scenes, which I felt were very reminiscent of the Universal horror movie style.
Yes, yes. So,
if it could have broken away from that a little more, especially in the dialogue scenes, because if you watch a Universal horror movie, they are boring. Whenever the monster's not around, they are hideously boring when it's just people having conversations. It's like
yes.
a stationary camera, like it's set up for theater, you know?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And it's like, this is a movie.
So if they had, like, better cinematography, I think that would have really pushed this up. And then better, tighter dialogue, I guess you would say. So it doesn't feel so rambly.
Mm-hmm.
Could have maybe made this movie.
Yes, they let the I won't say they let the actors, but the dialogue scenes allowed for rambling, like what we're doing right now.
But I guess because of, all the potentials in it, I'll give it 4 shoulder eyeballs out of 5.
4 shoulder eyeballs.
Yeah.
All right. You know, we've seen a lot of really terrible films. This one really engaged me you know, and like I said, I'm coming from this point of view of having watched a lot of the Universal horror films.
You're right.
I've also watched a lot of Japanese films. I mean, it's usually Godzilla.
So you're probably...
But I have recently been going through, like, all the Akira Kurosawa films, like Seven Samurai and Yojimbo and Drunken Angel was the last one I watched.
Uh-huh.
Stray Dog was another. And, oh, Rashomon, which was my favorite at this point. I'm really into them.
Well, what are you rating?
And, yeah, I'm sorry, I'm rambling. But it's like, and if you spend a lot of time reading into it the way I did while we were watching it, you know, the way we did, and you're thinking about the elements of it, it really engaged on that level. So I'm going to give this a 4.9.
Ooh,
Dead Geishas.
The highest rating we have ever given a film.
Yes. I'm holding back just a little because as soon as this movie, I was ready to go all out and go for the 5.5, it's because of what I'm reading into it. I'm seeing the potentials and seeing what influenced this movie and the potentials of what they were going for. And also really appreciating that this movie really engaged me more than any of the other movies we've reviewed.
Yeah.
So I'm holding back a smidge, but I highly recommend this. If you're a fan of B-movies or a fan of horror movies in general, check this one out. It may not look... It's got a very
cheesy
title.
Yeah, The Manster.
Yeah,
but
that didn't give me much hope.
but listeners, this one might be worth...
But give it a chance. This is the hidden gem that I was looking for when we started this podcast. You know what I mean? This is one of those hidden gems.
Yeah, maybe.
And I'm cherishing it.
Okay.
So that's our show.
Let's give him all right. Next
give
week.
Give him the roundup.
Roundup.
Oh, what do we got for him next week, Lucas?
We have Robot Pilot. Lengthy synopsis here. A test pilot and his weather observer partner are trying to develop a robot-controlled plane they hope their employer can sell to the Army. Foreign agents team of their... Foreign agents learn of their work and sabotage the plane, hoping to stop the inventors and allowing the spies to steal the invention. Partnering with their boss's daughter and her aunt, our inventors hope to thwart the plans of the spies and deliver the robot plane to the Army, thus saving the company. Starring Forrest Tucker, 1941.
Yes. So, I'm looking forward to this one a little bit because I've heard of this film because of MST3K.
Oh.
And this is one of the films, specifically the main actor, that Forrest Tucker guy, that really stuck in that crew's craw for a while. Like, they'd bring it up in other... movies they were ripping on. They would say it's like, yeah, he's bad, but not as bad as Forrest Tucker. You know what I mean? So I want to see just what the hell they were going on about. So I'm excited for this.
Oh boy, oh boy.
It's gonna be special.
Okay, listeners. Well,
this might be up there with a Starman, dude. I mean, it's gonna go one of two ways. It's either gonna be a Starman or a Rocky Jones.
No.
Could go either way here.
Okay, listeners, well, thanks for listening to this quite in-depth discussion of The Manster. If you want to listen to other podcasts, including ours and totally different ones, you can find us at psychojellyfish.com. You can also email us any of your comments or questions or suggestions. If you got any other movies you want us to watch, just send it to email@psychojellyfish.com. But you can also send things like that to our Facebook page at facebook.com/psychojellyfish or our Twitter account at jellycast. So if you got something you want to share and want us to know, do it. We'd love to hear from you. This has been No U-Turn to the Drive-In with Lucas Wilson
and Dave Halstead. Good night, gentle listeners.
Keep it psycho.
It's Jello Land.